Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're almost there. We've almost reached the finish line, the promised land. November 7th, Jamie's birthday. The day that
shall live in infamy.
Yeah, well.
Wait, nope, that's not quite right.
My daughter turned 17, but almost as importantly, Apple ships presumably the final products they'll ship this year.
I mean, I don't know. You're not holding out for some sort of December surprise.
Maybe no.
Santa shows up and drops an air power in your stocking and it catches on fire and burns
your house down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, the air power right down the chimney into the fireplace. Set the fire on fire. It could be like instead of crinkled up newspaper, just use an air power. Rejected air power prototype.
It's not that the product is broken. It's that they're targeting the wrong market.
Yeah.
It's not a charging pad at all.
Way to think positively.
Yeah, trying to get that marketing spin in.
Yeah, you got to do it. That's right. It's are you getting it yet? it's an inductive charger and a fire starter.
All I want to say is that I think I'm better at analogies than Tim Cook is.
All right. So when you go to the 10 items or less line.
Does anyone else think Tim Cook maybe hasn't been in a supermarket in a while?
I think somebody gave him that. I think somebody fed him that and said, look, this is perfectly logical. So what we're talking about is, in addition to every other thing that is going on, I'm going to not swear on this podcast, even though I could, but people would be offended and it's fine. Every other rassin thing that's been going on, Apple's results were yesterday. And in the results, they basically said, oh, funny story. This is the end of our fiscal year. We're never telling you how many iPhones or iPads or Macs we've sold ever again. And the analysts are like, really? That's information that we find valuable. And Apple's like, yep, well.
Tough.
Basically, they're like, yeah, we think our revenues speak for themselves. And that is all that is required of us legally by the federal government as a public company. And so we're not going to tell you the rest. And then when they pressed them on it, Tim Cook said, actually, Luca, the CFO, answered the question. And then Tim Cook jumped in for his last statement. And then they literally ended the call as soon as this happened.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, he jumped in and said, oh, this is Tim. When you're in the supermarket, they don't tell you how many items you bought. They tell you how much it costs.
Right. I think he said, like, when you go up to the cashier, they don't ask how many items you have in your cart.
And your cart.
Have you been to the 12 items or less thing? That's, like, kind of exactly what they're asking.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't say the 12 items for less thing isn't, like, $800 or less of groceries. Yes.
Right. Exactly. There were probably just, all I'm saying is there were better analogies you probably could have gotten away with that one. Pick the one that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I get what they're saying, but what this means is that we aren't going to be able to calculate average selling price of things, which is, they're fine with that. Their argument is that iPhone revenue was up like 20-some% year over year, but the sales were almost flat. They were up, but very, very slightly. And what they say is, you guys look at this, and then everybody reports, oh, iPhone sales are flat. Whereas we look at this, and we see the mix inside the iPhone, and we see that more sales are growing in these more lucrative areas. And then we also had sales down in the cheaper phones, but those don't matter. But all we do is give you a single roll-up number, and that can be misinterpreted. Now, the problem with that is, one, they could totally break those up down if they wanted to, but they don't want to. And so, come on, please.
It's like the opposite of the answer, which is like, well, in that case, give us more information.
We could give you more information, but what we've decided to do is not give you information instead. And you're just going to have to guess. The argument from people who cover Apple, especially financially, is this is Apple. You know, there's truth in his statement, because basically this is Apple saying we're going into a period where our sales of our products are going to be relatively flat. And we're focused on increasing the revenue generation side of our business. And so we're not going to even give you units anymore, because all you should care about as an investor in this company, which again is why they disclose this stuff, is, are we growing our revenue? And if we can grow our revenue 20% a quarter, it shouldn't matter that iPhone sales are flat, because we're growing revenue and that's all that matters to you. I think there's truth in what they're saying, but I think that also fundamentally, I just think Apple I'm surprised Apple has gone this long with this much level of disclosure because
I agree.
They only do it because they have to. If they could get away with it, this is why Elon Musk did his boo-boo on Twitter and was like, wow, we're just going to take it private. It's like, private companies don't have to disclose anything.
Right.
That's
sure.
great. But
absolutely.
Apple's a public company. They got to disclose some things, but not everything.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the conspiracy theories around the vast number of like share repurchases and buybacks they had done was like, well, do you think Apple would want to take the company private? Yeah. I don't think that's feasible.
It's not,
but
not
it's,
possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's still, you know, there is something to be said for less control in external forces and more control. The same reason, like, you know, we used to cover at Macworld the shareholders meeting every year.
Right.
And yeah, all the people get up with these, you know, in like proposals,
some of which were well-meaning. A phone that I can wear on my belt.
Yeah. And like, they'd be like, no, we're not going to do that. Right. Like, and again, you know, there's an argument that some of the proposals were well-meaning, but weighing against the, you know, the grain of the company or what the management wanted to do. And while you are beholden to your shareholders, you are not beholden to every single individual shareholder. And I think Apple would be happy if they didn't feel, you know, beholden to any, if they have to, or at least, you know, fine if they have like shareholders, but didn't have like, you know, people coming in. Warren Buffett's not going to knock on their door and be like, guys, can you do something about my iPhone? It's broken. maybe Carl Icahn, maybe. But yeah, so this is another way that Apple is just, you know, like you said, they like to play their cards close to their vest. And this is another way that they can avoid that. And famously, like, you know, they do really well in these financials and their stock price goes down. And, you know, stock price isn't everything about a company, but like, certainly people seem to be betting against them very heavily still. So if they can find a way to reduce the sort of vulnerabilities there, or what they consider the vulnerabilities, and have people, you know, less tuned into the nitty-gritty details of their business, that's a win for them.
Yeah. I don't love it, although I will say it really reduces the number of charts I have to make. So there's that.
Yep. Indeed. Yeah. And, you know, as you made the joke about in one of your charts about Jeff Bezos, and famously the Bezos charts, which have no access or anything. But like, you know, Amazon's done pretty well not giving out a lot of information about any of its products whatsoever. And in fact, I think Apple probably looks at that and goes, wait, Amazon has never told you how many Kindles they've sold, how many Echoes they've sold, how many subscribers they have for like these services, how many customers, you know, like. And mm-hmm. Every quarter, people are like, oh, Amazon's a great buy. You know, they're like, what are we doing wrong here?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it does mean, so there are some details that Apple doesn't release it with the financials. And you see people like Horace Dedu, who they will occasionally mention facts that they will cherry pick, right, because they only do it when it suits them. But it allows him to make estimates about how many iPhones are in the, you know, in the install base or things like that, that are not essentially activations. That's different from a sales figure. And that's what's going to happen now, is that we're going to hear more from independent estimates, and we're going to hear cherry picked stats from Apple that suit Apple. And we're going to have to figure the rest of it out, because they're just not going to disclose. And that's what it's going to have to be. Fortunately, revenue is actually a pretty good proxy. Unless you are, think of it this way. We always talk about how Apple doesn't want to play the market share game. Mm-hmm. I think it's very clear that modern Apple is not interested in playing the unit sales game. It's a very similar game. Yeah. It's like, I was going to say something stupid, like, it's like checkers and some other game that you play on a checkerboard that's not chess. But no, it's like two different, it's right, they're similar, they're related games. It's like baseball and cricket. They're similar games, and Apple doesn't want to play them, right? Because Apple, in the end, it's like, look, are we making money or are we not? Do you see the money? Do you see the money? That's all you should care about. And I think we could have some discussions about what that says about Apple's priorities that are similar to discussions that people have about Apple continuing to raise the prices of all of its products. That mm-hmm. Apple seems, Tim Cook's Apple, modern Apple, seems to be very much focused on extracting as much money out of its existing customers as possible and maintaining that customer base, and is less interested in playing essentially the market share game, which is look at all of these customers you could get who will buy your cheapest product and then spend very little money in your ecosystem. And I think Apple's argument is basically they're not interested in that. They're not interested in being a loss leader to get people in the door. That's kind of never been their brand, but it's really not their brand now.
Yeah. I mean, and the good news, at least from our perspective, too, is that while this does reduce the available, you know, surfaces which we can use to glean information about, this is a fairly small part of our job, right? Like, you know, it's something that we cover every quarter and we're going to continue talking about it. But we're not necessarily people who get down regularly into the nitty, right? We're not the analysts who are like, this is their job. And that just made their job a lot harder. Yeah, we're lucky in that we still talk about products and like the details of products rather than just the numbers. And hey, there were some new products this past week.
I just flew in from Brooklyn, and boy, are my arms tired. Yeah. So product announcements. It's the unloved Macs. The MacBook Air, well, loved,
hey,
but
the,
forgotten.
The most loved the Mac most loved of Mac, all time, apparently. We just realized.
That's right. I'd like some more color on that, Tim. Can you tell me what statistic it is that you used to calculate out which one was most loved? the most loved and missed Mac that hasn't been updated in 4 years, and the Mac Mini, which is, again, loved by the people who love it. It is the cult. It's the deep cut of the Mac. Mm-hmm. How about that? And they both got updates. So MacBook Air, like that, I wrote a story early this year called Why Won't It Die? And I had a bunch of people write to me and are like, I like it. Why do you want it to die? And I was like, no. Think of it more like an older relative who is very, 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 very sick. Like, okay, here's an example. Willie McCovey, the Giants great Hall of Famer, died this week. First baseball game I ever went to was the day he announced his retirement.
I want a trivia question in a minor league game where the answer was Willie McCovey. That's
some glenning right there. Yeah. So anyway, a lot of the statements from people who knew him, from Joe Morgan, from Barry Bonds, from a bunch of people who knew him, said, we love him, we will miss him, we're glad that he's out of pain. He had horrible medical problems, knee problems, and they're like, we're glad that he's not suffering anymore. And you know, we've all probably had people like that in our lives where you've had that feeling of like, I'm super sad that they're gone, but at the same time it was time for them to go. They were miserable, they were unhappy, they were in a lot of pain. Yeah. I bring this up, I'm not trying to minimize the human condition, because I actually do deeply feel this and understand it, but my point is that's kind of the place I was coming from when I said to the MacBook Air, why won't it die? It's like, look, if you're gonna let it sit out there and be just like garbage compared to the rest of the computers that you're selling right now, and it just floats out there untouched for years, make it just tell us it's gone, right? And make it go away. And they wouldn't do it. And I think their plan originally was that they were going to kill it, and then they couldn't, and so it sat out there. What I'm saying is I'm very happy that it instead of dying, it got a new lease on life. I would never have guessed it based on Apple's behavior the last few years, but I'm very happy that it exists again, because it is, having held one in my hands, I pick one off the table. I heard, I think it was Marco said that somebody yelled at him when he closed it. They didn't yell at me. I picked it up. I closed it. I was flipping it around and touching all the top and bottom and sides and looking at the feet and everything, because it's like, I know MacBook Airs. I have been using MacBook Airs for a decade. And, you know, it's a MacBook Air. It is exactly what you would imagine a new generation MacBook Air would be. Now, I thought that perhaps they should have released this product 2 or 3 years ago, but they didn't. Yeah. Here it is now, probably because they thought they weren't going to have to. But it is a MacBook Air. Make no mistake. It feels very much like the MacBook Air that you know and love.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because I'm a MacBook Air user and have been for many years now. In fact, I was writing a column about this the last week, I think. That was where I noted that the MacBook Air, so I had a 2011 11-inch MacBook Air followed by a 2014 11-inch MacBook Air, which is essentially, you know, a better version of the same computer. It is the Mac form factor that I've owned, I think, longer than any other is the 11-inch Air. Because I've had it for a total of, 7 years now. I don't think I've ever had a Mac, like, consistency in a Mac lineup. And some of that is because the Mac lineup has not, the Air was so stagnant, as you say. So I'm glad to see it there. I'm a little sad that it's the 13-inch and not the 11-inch, but it's also a smaller 13-inch, yeah. So it gets closer to the 11-inch. So,
and the 12-inch MacBook is sort of residing in what the 11-inch Air space would be. I have an 11-inch Air right in front of me now. Lauren's computer is a MacBook Air 13. Julian is using my old 11-inch Air. So we have three Airs, two 11-inch, one 13-inch, and a MacBook. Those are the four computers, four laptops in our house, and I've got my iMac out here too, and I've got a Mac Mini out here too. So yeah, near and dear to my heart, and it's a great computer.
It does point to just a weird. The Apple's laptop line became no clearer after this announcement. In fact, it became in some ways more confusing because it seems to me like
I think there's a little. I've been thinking about this. I think there's a little bit of clarity in certain places. Now, in terms of where the line is going, I think it is clear as mud. But in terms of me like recommending what computer should people buy, I feel like it's easier now because I think the MacBook Air is a pretty good catch-all thing to say, look, start with the MacBook Air. I'm going to write about this at some point. I was thinking about like the Venn diagram of Apple laptops. I was thinking you could probably make an argument that the MacBook Air, the new MacBook Air, is at the center of the Venn diagram.
Sure.
Right? It's the lowest priced of all of them that are Retina. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about the old Air still being for sale. So the lowest price of all of them.
It won't die, Jason. It won't die.
It's a nice size. It's got two Thunderbolt ports. It's a capable computer. It's not a pro computer, but it's capable. And then from there, you can pay a little bit more to shave off almost an entire pound and go down to the MacBook. If you prize thinness and lightness more than anything else, and you're going to lose a port, you're going to lose Thunderbolt, but you might not care. And then if you want, and there's definitely been a lot of criticism, that I've heard about the fact that it's a single 5-watt processor. It is not upgradable. It's just like you get the processor you get with it, kind of like every iOS device. I think there's just going to throw it out there. I think that's a trend. I think Apple is going to differentiate power by product and not within a product going forward. I think that's going to happen in the Mac as well. But for people who like me, who I did a build to order, I'm looking right now at my mid 2013 MacBook Air that I've got in front of me here. And, this is a build-to-order i7. Well, you can't do that with this MacBook Air, but know what you can do?
Same as my 2014.
Just pay $100 more and get the MacBook Escape. See, that's how this, in a way, it kind of works. I don't love that the MacBook Escape hasn't been updated yet, but there is a path to spend a little more money and get features. And that is, you go to the Escape or you go to the Touch Bar.
And I do sympathize with people because like you, I've got a 2014 MacBook, which has a Core i7 in it and has more memory, more storage. And I like having that power in that package. And that's just not an option and that's fine. Like you said, that's Apple's making their differentiation. But it is a bummer to me that I can't configure more and get a computer that's the shape and size I want with the power that I would like. And it's not because they couldn't do it. I would presume that, they could put a faster processor in there. Granted, it would be
possible.
More power hungry.
It's possible.
And, there may be a trade-off in there as well.
Although they I don't know the details of how they've engineered the thing. It may have been that it was a very different bit of engineering if they wanted to put a different part on it because that could be more power, the thing. But I suspect
some of it also might be
The Escape is not much heavier. It's not much thicker. And it's got the 15-watt processor in it, so for $100 more you get something that isn't shaped like an Air, and it's not the maybe mainstream crowd pleaser, but it's right there if you need more stuff. It's right there.
I get that, but I do sympathize with the lack of configuration options. I do think you're right that it's a trend that we're going to see more and more from Apple, like, in that direction. But it does make me a little wistful for the days of I can, you know, being able to configure what I, because, you know, at a certain point, like, right now, the MacBook Air has two configurations, I think, and it's basically a storage differentiation, which is exactly like an iOS device, as you say. Mm-hmm. What an interesting trend. Although I do think you can bump up the RAM on them, and that, for the moment, is still a possibility. But yeah, it's. I mean, if I were to replace the MacBook Air I have right now, you know, it breaks tomorrow and I have to go out and buy a new computer, I think I would probably just, you know, pick up the new MacBook Air. That seems like, for me, that would be in that sweet spot, as you say. But, you know, at the same time, I do think that I would potentially be making some sacrifices and I'd have to look hard at the MacBook Pro on one end of the spectrum.
Sure.
Or, you know, my love of the 11-inch form factor, I have to look hard at the MacBook on the other end of the spectrum.
But again, I mean, in the theory of the center of the Venn diagram, I think that that's... I think that's exactly right. Is that
the
you
center
start,
of the Venn diagram is me tearing my hair out trying to decide what laptop to buy.
Start with the Air, and then it's like, well, do I want thinner and lighter and you know, less featured, or do I want more... you know, more features and more power and a little bit heavier and not quite as nice.
Not to say that the MacBook isn't a perfectly viable alternative, but that said, it does feel like it... There's something about the balance of what it's offering to its cost that still doesn't quite work for me. And I understand, like, you know, size, as I said, is a thing that people are willing to pay a premium for. But it is disappointing that it didn't either get a slight price cut or didn't get a slight bump in terms of what it can do. And maybe it will. Maybe it will in the next 6 months to a year. It will see a revision. In fact, it will almost certainly see a revision at some point. But yeah, the one port thing has always stuck in my craw a bit, which is one reason I would find it harder to go to a MacBook, mainly because when I do travel and record podcasts, and that's going to mean automatically requiring, you know, a dock or multi-port thing.
Right.
So that's a frustration. But... yeah, I it's funny to me that it is still priced more at a premium despite being less featured. But, you know, size is an issue.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with it because of that. I think that back in the early days of the MacBook Air, that was the thing, is you actually paid more for less because you wanted not that you wanted fewer features, but that size was a
trumped
feature.
Everything else.
Size is also a feature. We were in a Slack, we're both in. There was just a conversation about this. And I really, you know, there is a class of user, of customer, of technology who believes that the only differentiator is specs. And the specs they mean are processor and graphics and storage and things like that. But as I wrote, whatever, almost 10 years ago or 10 years ago for the MacBook Air, weight and, you know, length and height and thickness are specs. And for some people, it's more important that they have a 3-pound computer or a 2-pound computer than that they have a little more processor power. Not for every, and for other people, it's a very different decision, but it is, you know, smallness is a feature that is worth paying for some people. And as somebody who, you know, I mean, the 11-inch Air ended up being the cheapest of the Airs, but I would have paid more for it or the same for it. And in fact, I would do an i7 build to order in it because I wanted, I wanted that. That was the computer that I wanted.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm interested in the direction the laptop line is going in. The other thing that struck me is the Touch ID integration with no touch bar.
Yes.
Which is fascinating because, I wrote a piece today from Macworld that was talking about technologies I think the writing is on the wall for. And the touch bar, man, I think it's up there because the Touch ID was widely acclaimed when the touch bar came out as like the best feature that's part of that, right? And the touch bar itself has been a very meh offering for most people. And so to come out with a computer that had the Touch ID and no touch bar, well, it's cheaper for sure. It lets you get the T2 in there, which has a lot of both efficiency and cost reductions, probably. I don't think anybody would miss the touch bar.
I'm sure somebody would. But
sure, there's always someone.
But it seems like, it seems like that's not... I had some... I mean, the touch bar is moving us toward Apple's grand vision of not having anything that moves anywhere. Not that I think that is imminent, but who knows?
Do you see there's along those lines, I was just seeing a story today. There's a Lenovo, I think it's a Lenovo notebook that has an e-ink keyboard.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man, that's like the crappy version of what Apple will eventually do, I'm sure.
Yep. The so I had a funny idea. And this is a change of gears because I'm talking about the iPad Pro. I had a funny idea, which, again, is not a thing that I suspect will actually ever happen. But I like to think about these wacky scenarios. So one scenario, people were talking about the doing macOS on ARM, if they're going to be ARM Mac someday. Mm-hmm. And what would, you know, would developers get warning for that or whatever? Which you'd think that they would.
Probably.
Although, and I had this. So I've had this vision before, but I had it again when I was thinking about these iPad Pros that just got announced. And my vision was, we're at WWDC, and it's 2019, and Apple announces that they're gonna do macOS on ARM. And they say we're gonna release a new version of macOS on ARM for you to test with your apps today, and everybody's gonna go, what? Huh? They'll say, and you'll run it on your iPad Pro. And people are like, what do you mean you're going to install macOS on the iPad Pro? And they're like, yep. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but how are we going to do that? Well, you can plug it into a USB-C. You can plug it into a monitor now. And you can either have like your Bluetooth keyboard and mouse to use it when you boot it into Mac mode. Or, and this is the part that I'm really proud of because it's such a bad idea and yet so brilliant, is, or you lay your iPad down flat and it's your keyboard and trackpad.
Oh, no.
And it's attached to a screen, and the screen is your Mac display, and your iPad is now just a multi-purpose input device, keyboard and trackpad. I'm not saying they're going to do it, although they totally could.
I'm going to tell you how much I don't want that, but...
These keys have no travel. No travel at all. Well, again, in my vision, you can attach a, you know, a USB via dongle or a Bluetooth, and then use those instead, and attach it to an external display and run the Mac on. Again, I don't think they're ever going to use iOS hardware to do Mac stuff, but I have repeatedly have that thought of like, well, you've got a capable device that's ARM that you could put macOS on.
Well, let's put it this way. Sooner or later, I would not bet against a macOS, you know, macOS distribution running on ARM. I'm sure there's one in Apple, right?
I think
it seems a lock that exists somewhere.
Yeah, let's be clear here. The move here, when I talk about how the MacBook Air only has, I'm going to have to get used to saying that again, the MacBook Air has only... one processor config. It's like, it's hard not to look at all of this and say that Apple is pushing the Mac in the direction that iOS devices are, which is they all have, you know, essentially in the long run, like, we're not going to tell you how much RAM is in them. We're not going to tell you what the processor is or what the processor speed is. We're just going to tell you that this has got this class processor. And if you want this other model that has this other processor in it and this other RAM in it, you can get that. That's what the iPhone and an iPad do already.
It's probably a hell of a lot cheaper than trying to do a build to order configurations for people, right?
And yeah, so on top of all of that, like we've been talking about all week, at this point, like, the iPad Pro is probably in all facets faster than the MacBook. It's probably faster than the MacBook Air and maybe even the MacBook Escape, but it's basically just as powerful as multiple Macs in the product lineup, which means, could Apple make an A12X powered or A13 or A13X powered Mac, a MacBook?
Sure.
They
sure
absolutely could. In fact, one might say perhaps the MacBook won't ever get updated in its current form, and the next MacBook we see will be running an A12 processor.
Right.
It could happen.
To that end, I mean, I think that let's put it this way. As soon as there is a publicly available ARM, you know, version of macOS, if possible, someone will hack it to run on an iPad. And I'm not, and more to the point, someone in Apple probably has already been like, oh, if we've got this ARM distro of this macOS over here, we got our iPads over there, I mean, I bet I could get it running, right?
I mean,
like, it would be a freaking nightmare in a number of ways, I'm sure, but
I think
for giggles, somebody's got that.
It is a non-zero percentage chance that they will do the scenario I outlined, where the developer hardware for macOS on ARM is an iPad. Non-zero chance.
In my head, that is so trippy.
Isn't that crazy? Right? But the idea that you could take your iPad Pro and suddenly you boot it and it's running Mac OS with a keyboard and a mouse.
Boot camp lives again.
Yeah. It's Mac boot camp now. Camp
Snoopy.
Oh,
my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
It's going to haunt my nightmares.
But it is hard not to look at this and say, I mean, because the other thing that several people pointed out is, I believe Intel was not mentioned on stage. They mentioned core processors and i5 and i3 and i7, but they didn't mention the company. And I think it's fair to look at that and say, this is Apple distancing itself from Intel because we are getting closer and closer to the moment where Apple flips over and is selling some Macs, at least, that don't use Intel processors. And
sure,
at this point, I got to say, it's hard to see, especially in the small and light laptop line, why they would not, right? Like, by accounts, these Apple processors are just, they're better. They're killing it, and Intel is not.
The same exact rationale for why Apple moved to Intel processors in the first place was that they were more power efficient and they were being developed like faster, right? Like they were more innovative than the PowerPC processors. So if by that token, your own in-house processors, which you have way more control over, are also advancing faster.
It's like Steve Jobs' greatest dream would have been,
make the whole widget.
What if, in the Intel PowerPC transition, instead of Intel as where you were going, it was yourself. Steve Jobs would be like, whoa, we make our own processors for everything and control the whole thing. Let's do that. Well, I think that they are very close to that now.
Oh, I totally agree. And where was the...
This is funny. There's so much skepticism of so much that Apple does now, but it's like, I don't hear anybody saying that Apple isn't killing it on mobile chips, right? Like, they're killing it. They are so successful at what they're doing with their custom design silicon that it feels like at this point it's more of an advantage for Apple to move to their own processors and get all of the battery savings and speed and all of these things than the advantages of being Intel compatible.
Yeah, I'm gonna put a flag in the ground here. So I was just looking at, so the A4 was the first Apple designed processor, right? And that was in the iPhone 4.
Uh-huh.
And that was 2010. I think I would be shocked if by 2020 there was not a Mac running on an ARM chip.
Yeah.
10 years? Like, that seems like, to me, I feel like in some ways you could look at that 10-year ramp and just be like, that is basically them getting to the point where, yeah, we can basically do everything we can do on a Mac with these things, switch it over. And not for the entire line necessarily, but I think there will be a Mac running on an ARM chip by 2020. So I'll go down to Vegas. I'll put my money down.
I think that is a good statement. I think it may be 2019, but it may be 2020. Again, they could do whatever they want, but I kind of feel like they need to give developers some warning for this one.
Yeah.
Not just like have an event and say, here's an ARM MacBook, good luck. Right?
Sure.
Like nothing works yet, or it works in code translation, but developers have just been given the tools.
I think you'll see something very much like we saw with the Intel transition, where, you know, it's demoed and shown off and you know, there is some sort of heads up. I mean, I'm sure there will be some sort of technology to translate existing, like Rosetta style technology to translate existing apps, at least for some stuff. But yeah, I think you're right that there will be this is not a thing that you drop necessarily a product day one, because there's a lot of stuff that's not going to work right. But it is something that, you know, you probably do say like, all right, we're going to be moving our line and, you know, this is on this time scale or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we've been stacking up the iOS processors against the Mac processors for a while now, and it continues to get more and more impressive and continues to look more and more beneficial for Apple. And let's not just forget, from a psychological standpoint, which is the way I always look at it here, Apple does not want to be beholden to any other company when it comes to making their products.
Not like that exactly is what right.
They still have that deep-seated fear from the 90s, mm-hmm. right, where they were kind of stuck with their own, like, their hardware suppliers, and they, you know, had to try the whole clone approach, and I think they never want to be in that position again. Those are the dark days that they run yes. away from in their nightmare. So this makes perfect sense. And look at all the other stuff that they're bringing in-house. You know, they're designing, in theory, modem stuff. They brought graphics stuff in-house. They're bringing power management. They just hired, they had that crazy deal with the UK based company where they basically hired a whole bunch of their people who worked on like power management stuff and integrated chips. And like, to me, they've always wanted to build the whole widget stem to stern as much as they possibly could. So it makes perfect sense that they would expand that to the rest of their product lines.
Yeah, they metallurgy, don't forget metallurgy.
they make the freaking cases. Yeah, like
they got the shavings from their factory floor that they've now melted down and turned into MacBook Airs and Mac Minis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Weird, man. Super yeah. weird.
It's good. Well, I read somewhere, and I think it's absolutely true, that the company with the most materials knowledge on aluminum in the world is Apple. Like, more than any other
Seems
company.
Plausible.
Apple, like... And I've heard stories about how, like, Apple brought aerospace engineers, like, from the Apollo program and from Boeing and stuff out of retirement to help them with some, you know, aluminum stuff over the years, because some of the stuff Apple's been doing hadn't been tried since they were doing, like, super lightweight space frames and airframes in the 60s. Like, it's kind of funny. I feel like, I wonder if Apple has, like, funded a material sciences program at some colleges and things to get the next generation of people to do metals stuff for them.
We're talking about the company that improved gold.
That's right. They got their own formulation of gold. It's way better. Well, now they got their own formulation of recycled aluminum that is way better. Or at least, I think the point is it's all of the output put back in, and it still feels just like the stuff they were doing before. I think that's what they're going for there, which is good.
It's smart and efficient and no doubt saves them money in the long term.
Yeah.
So they're savvy about that kind of thing, no doubt.
All right. Well, more to come, more to write about, more to talk about. Next week the products come out. So, woo.
Yep.
Yeah.
There we go.
It keeps going. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there. I wrote a lot of stuff on the website this week, and we wrote a newsletter and put it out this week. So check those out, too, dear Six Color subscribers. And next week, we'll have products in our hands, probably, of some kind or other. And we'll be back then. So until then, goodbye, everybody. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.